Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
You're listening to Halftime Report in progress.
I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
And with that, I'll yield back. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
The gentleman yields back. The gentleman from Oklahoma, Mr. Lucas, is now recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, I think my timing for my question is perfect. Chairman Powell, I'd like to discuss with you today an issue that is of significant concern to me and many of my colleagues. The SEC's regulatory agenda has more than 50 significant proposals that are currently underway or approaching a final vote. These rules cut across every asset class under the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission's jurisdiction. The sheer complexity and volume of these overlapping rulemakings could negatively impact markets and the public that depends on them. SEC Commissioner Hester Peirce, I should say, warned that the speed and character of these rulemakings could create dangerous conditions in our capital markets. Now, this is against a backdrop of the U.S. economy facing significant challenges. We've discussed that all morning. Inflation at more than a 40-year high, with substantial increases in the cost of food, housing, and gas prices at record prices. Also, supply chain backlogs and labor shortages continue to weigh on the economy, with consumer and business confidence plummeting. And of course, we're still studying the impact of the global pandemic and the consequences of the ongoing Russian invasion of the Ukraine. In Oklahoma, small businesses, farmers, ranchers are navigating through surging energy prices and volatile agricultural markets for inputs like grain and fertilizer. Poor crop conditions and high commodity prices are expected to worsen the situations throughout the summer and into the rest of the year. In uncertain times like this, market participants need to seek to protect their retirement savings, to hedge risk, and to safeguard their livelihoods. A top priority should be supporting liquid markets to protect the U.S. economy from the face of these substantial headwinds. I know you don't comment on other entities within the federal government. I know these regulations that are going to have such a tremendous impact are not coming from your area. But unfortunately, I'm concerned that the magnitude and the significance of rulemaking proposals coming out of the SEC in such a short amount of time runs counter to the goal. We know that regulatory uncertainty creates adverse market environment for economic growth and market stability. So, Chairman Powell, I'll not ask you to comment on the SEC, but could you speak to the importance of market liquidity during periods of economic uncertainty?
Yes. So markets are there to, one of the things they do is process information and consider the implications of it. And it's critical that markets be liquid enough to do that. If that happens, then financial conditions can adjust and equity prices of various kinds can adjust. And that's one of their big functions, is to do that and to absorb news, sometimes very difficult news, in a way that preserves stability.
I think Congress and the public should have the opportunity to fully grasp the impact of the SEC sweeping proposals. If we really want to tame inflation, we should begin to by not making the current situation worse. The SEC's approach will rattle markets during a time when strong capital markets are essential to our economic growth and our constituents back home. After all, you're working hard on the demand side of the equation, but we in Congress and the administration should help with the supply side of the equation. And that is not making it more difficult to invest in and create more goods and services in this country. That said, Chairman Powell, as you've acknowledged, the Fed's monetary policy tools can do very little to mitigate rising gas prices. However, the increased cost of gas has an oversized impact on consumer inflation expectations. Folks see the price at the pump going up and experience the price per gallon at an all-time high. Could you discuss how the Fed envisions its ability to rein in inflation expectations, driven in large part by gas prices? Or put another way, if gas prices remain at record levels, is an aggressive response from the Fed all but guaranteed?
Well, if gas prices remain at the current levels they're at, then inflation, you know, it's the problem is inflation means continuing to go up. So it isn't so much the level as the rate of change, as you know. So I think we are mindful that even though these things are outside of our control, the gas prices and food prices for the most part, that adds a little bit of urgency in our wanting to get our rates into a place where we're addressing inflation directly, because the public reacts to all kinds of inflation, not just core inflation. Our tools generally go to core inflation, so we don't think we can use our tools to change energy prices, but we do think that they add to our desire to get expeditiously to the appropriate levels.
And clearly Congress and the administration, the majority, has a responsibility to increase supplies of resources, not discourage that. Yield back, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Gentleman's time has expired. The gentlewoman from Ohio, Ms. Beatty, who is also the chair of the Subcommittee on Diversity and Inclusion, is now recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Powell, for being here as you're navigating through all these federal issues during this difficult economic time. Chair Powell, after our hearing concludes, this committee will be voting on a few pieces of legislation, so I'm going to take advantage of having you here to shed some light on a few of the things that we will be considering. I can't think of a better person to give us some insight on these issues. First question is, we'll be voting on an amendment that would delay the SEC's small business advocate from conducting outreach to underserved business owners until after gas prices drop to the pre-COVID level. Chair Powell, in your opinion, will delaying the SEC's outreach to minority business owners affect gas prices in any way?
With all respect, I'm reluctant to comment on proposed legislation.
Well, let me ask it this. Let's say if it's not legislation, is there a correlation between what gas prices would be in relation to what they were with pre-COVID with inflation?
Again, I'd be expressing an opinion on someone's amendment, and if I start down that road, I don't know where it stops. I really, these are matters for elected people.
Well, would you say that the global markets and inflation is across the country, that we're seeing this everywhere?
Yes, inflation is happening everywhere now.
I'm dealing with a lot of fair housing issues in my district. And, you know, I have a long history of working with public housing and relocating people. And as we look at issues with housing, do you think housing is any way tied to inflation?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the question. I apologize.
Do you think what's happening in our housing market is tied to inflation in any way?
Yes, it is. Yes. So housing costs are about a third of the CPI. Housing, we call them housing services. And that's really rents plus the way it works is, in effect, an owner of a house is charging something called owner's equivalent rent, or paying something called owner's equivalent rent. So yes, it's an important factor in inflation.
Okay. So can you tell us, in your opinion, in light of Congressman Vargas's question, as he was giving us an idea of, as some of our colleagues are trying to tie things to the American Rescue Plan, trying to tie it to us taking care of the least of us, that if it is tied to inflation, why in other areas or countries that, and they don't have the American Rescue Plan, and How do you answer more about Mr. Vargas's question? I mean, I know he gave you a litany. I'm not trying to put you on the spot with quizzing you on what their inflation rate is in comparison to ours. But I think you got where he was going with this. Is there anything else you'd like to elaborate on in relationship to where he was going?
Sure. So I'll just say these things are, there are differences between, even though we have a very similar inflation rate from with a lot of the large European democracies now, pretty close, there are differences between countries. And the difference with the U.S. compared to the European countries is that ours is more about demand. We have areas of our economy where demand is substantially in excess of supply. That's not mainly a feature of the European economies, where they're really feeling, you know, very, very high inflation because of energy prices and also food prices mm-hmm. now. That's part of our story, too. We're also feeling energy and food prices. But we have this other part that is more core inflation, that is more susceptible to being managed by our tools and is really the object of our tools.
My time is already up, but in light of your response to my first question, I just need to say for the record, I can't conceive of a single connection between gas prices set by global markets and giving advice to small businesses. And the same, I have a hard time coming up with a theory of how allowing discriminatory housing will help stem inflation. And I think my time is up. I yield back.
Gentlewoman's time has expired. The gentleman from Texas, Mr. Session, is now recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Chairman Powell, thank you very much for taking time to be with us. This is important to the American people who hear our questions. This is important for us as we weigh and measure and gauge your input, which we believe is exceptional. I've stated that to you in the past, that I believe that we need to have confidence in what you're doing. Today, I'd like to, if I can, without dissecting your thinking, use some of the words that you have provided for us today to see your thinking. You had stated that as it relates to the Fed, quote, we don't give advice to agencies. Now, that's a quote from you today. We don't give advice to agencies. Do you think that advice is different, which I do, than tools which you have to do your job? But I consider part of what you do best, perhaps the Fed, is advice. Can you help me to understand we don't give advice to agencies?
Well, so I think particularly on fiscal matters, fiscal matters affect people's lives. It affects industries and people and you know, tax levels and spending. That in our system is the province of elected people. And, you know, for someone who's an appointed person who hasn't stood for election and has a very narrow mandate, I just think we, you know, that's not appropriate. If we're going to wander into those kinds of things, then what would be the case for our independence? If we're going to be involved in every political issue that isn't directly connected to our work, then why would we be independent? We should just be another agency. But we have this independence, and I think to preserve it, we need to stick to what we do and, you know, resist the temptation to work on every problem, even the ones that are not assigned to us.
Well, let me say thank you for the answer. You do know, however, as we were talking about student loans, it's a rather large amount, about $1.2 trillion that is out there. You stated that you believe that would likely be dealt with in legislation. Now, that's what you said, likely to be dealt with in legislation, student debt. I think even private advice, not within your tool structure, but this advice that we're trying to land on, would be really important because it will be, the way I see it, the next large hit to inflation. And this is why Republicans, or at least this Republican, says that I believe that this administration, the Democratic Party, are making friends with inflation. They are using the toolbox that they have of politics and money and spending policies to make friends with inflation. So my point would be to you, I sure hope that someone could send an unnamed memo to someone saying that you have an opinion, if you have an opinion on that. Next point, we have had some discussions about unemployment. How is unemployment calculated?
So you have to be actively looking for work within the last month to be and not have a job to be unemployed. If you're not looking, then you're out of the labor force, and so you're not participating in the labor force. So those are the factors.
So what we want to do, some members of this committee have wanted to look back and to say, well, perhaps under President Trump, it was 3.5%. Now we're 3.6, so not a big difference. And yet the huge number of jobs that are available is really the factor. When there are not jobs, that is a problem. But to simply say, well, Trump was 3.5, now we're 3.6, everything is fair, it's all done. I think the other advice I'd love to have you have from the Fed is to someone about getting people back to work. Because today, the government has given zero instructions for federal workers to return to work. And I think that it is causing a mindset among many, we don't need to go to work, thus reflected in 3.6% unemployment and millions of jobs awaiting. Mr. Chairman, thank you for taking time to be here. It's my hope that you would find in your toolkit advice that becomes perhaps more important, and I thank you, sir.
Thank you.
The gentleman's time has expired. The gentleman from Florida, Mr. Lawson, is now recognized for 5 minutes.
Madam Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. We're loud and clear, and we can see you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I want to thank Ms. Powell for and welcome him back to the committee. I know it's a great deal that is going on. And Mr. Powell, I think earlier there might have been something that came from one another of my colleagues, and it was a rise in interest rate to combat inflation does come with a rise in unemployment rate and possibly contributing to an economic recession. While white unemployment rates have dropped to its pre-pandemic levels of 3%, and in QI 2022, the national black unemployment rate remains still at 6.5%. And I know something you can't say, but what suggestion can you offer to help prevent black and other minority communities from facing future economic inequities as the Federal Reserve consider continue to raise rates in the near future?
If I heard your question correctly, it was whether we're considering additional future interest rate increases, sir?
That's correct.
Yes. So I think just last week, my colleagues and I wrote down our forecast for this year, and we anticipate ongoing rate increases over the course of this year. Yes, additional rate increases.
Do you believe that the Fed's current inflation projection of 2022 and 2023 remains a good benchmark to consider, even with these vulnerability potentials growing in the upcoming months?
I think the latest projections that individual FOMC participants submitted were submitted last Wednesday. So I think they're still fresh, and And there's a range of expectations of people on the committee, but I think there are a reasonable set of projections, yes.
Okay. And Mr. Powell, several of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle have been debating about the Biden policy and so forth, which I know you can't comment on. But there is a concern where we were kind of caught off guard with the war in Ukraine. And then at the same time, our vulnerability of all of the things that we depend on for other countries. In your deliberation, when you all are working with the situation that has arrived, that came from the Russian-Ukraine war and other real estate and other stress in China spilling over into the United States, does the feds give a recommendation back to the administration on how we should proceed in the future? Because everything, we've done a lot of things with other countries and depend on a lot of countries for resources and so forth. And it looks like we're becoming very, very vulnerable. Well, it doesn't look like it. We're becoming very vulnerable to this dependability. Do you all make a recommendation back to the administration on how we should proceed in the future?
No, sir, we do not.
Okay, and so early on you said that as prominent led up, that policy position should be considered by the legislature or the administration. Am I correct?
I'm sorry, I lost track of what you said there. I apologize.
I think to some other colleague of mine, you stated that those policies should be left up to the Congress or to the administration. You all don't really deal with that aspect of it. Am I correct?
Well, I'm sorry, which aspect of it?
About what recommendation could be made for all of the things that we have all show that we depend on from other countries.
Yeah.
And I might not be really clear, but for example, like the gas situation with Russia, and wheat and stuff with Ukraine and stuff of this nature.
No, we're not in those discussions. Those are really discussions that happen inside the administration, the Treasury Department and the White House and the other agencies.
Okay. With that, Madam Chair, I yield back.
Gentleman yields back. The gentleman from Missouri, Mr. Lippenheimer, is now recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And welcome, Chairman Powell. Long morning for you and afternoon. Question for you with regards to a quote that on March 17th, the CFPB put out in a blog on rising interest rates in which they said, and I quote, "The CFPB is the arm of the Federal Reserve System that is fully focused on consumers, ensuring that markets are fair, transparent, and competitive," end quote. Do you believe the CFPB is an arm of the Federal Reserve? And do you have any control over their actions?
Well, they're an independent agency. We have no control whatsoever of their actions. They are actually, though, legally a bureau. The law makes them a bureau, and the profits that we make off of our balance sheet, we give all of them to the Treasury Department, except the part that we give to pay for the CFPB.
So does that make them an arm?
For all practical purposes, they're fully independent in all of their policies.
They're not an arm of the Federal Reserve, then. I wouldn't consider that an arm. They have a relationship, but they're not an arm.
Technically, they're a bureau, but
they're not under you, so they're not an arm. How they could be?
No,
an
we
arm.
Have no supervision. Okay. And, we collaborate with them, we coordinate with them, we talk to them.
Well, this is overreach by the director. I just want to make sure that everybody's on the same page. This is a bunch of nonsense, so it needs to be put in its place. Chairman, you've got your hands full right now. And this is Wall Street Journal from Tuesday. We had economists say recession is likely. Down here, we said stocks are not bottoming very soon. So we've got some concerns. I know yesterday you were in the Senate, and there was a lengthy discussion on inflation, which there has been here as this morning as well. And in my mind, there's four root causes of inflation. And we've had economists in your chair a few weeks ago, and I had one in my small business committee a couple weeks before that, and I asked the same question to them. I said, it looks to me like there's four causes of inflation. Monetary supply, rules and regulations, energy, and supply chain / job problems that we have with workers in the economy today. And they both agreed that's basically your four problems that are underpinning inflation. I asked them to give me a percentage on each one of them. They said roughly 40% for money supply 2020. So I guess my concern is that, you know, if you look at those four causes, you're trying to help fight inflation. It's one of your mandates. And you really, under money supply, is the only thing you have any ability to do something with. And even then, it's probably only half of it because Congress has control over how many dollars are put into the system with additional bills, like the $1 trillion stimulus package from last year, taxes and things like that. So it looks like you have a minimal amount of impact out of those four things. So it looks to me quite oftentimes whenever you're trying to control the inflationary stuff with the interest rate, it's kind of over here trying to do a little something when over here there's all sorts of stuff going on. And the administration seems to be at a contradiction to some of the things you're trying to accomplish over. Do you ever feel like that? Do you believe that may be a position that you're in right now?
So we're very focused on the part of the job that we can do and using our tools to do it.
Well, I understand that, Mr. Chairman, but I would seem that it would think that you're, all these other factors fall outside your purview here, and for you to try and manipulate it and everybody rely on you to solve the inflation problem by tinkering with the interest rate over here, it looks like that's a little overhyping the situation. But one of the things that is very concerning is the regulatory cost. In my discussion with the economist, he said, look, and this is the administration's own figures, last year, Biden administration, the cost of compliance with new regulations was $201 billion. That's astronomical. That's a huge cost that has to be built into all the small businesses and other businesses whenever they produce products and services for sale for customers. They've got to build in an additional $200 billion in costs every year. Would you agree that's a huge driver of inflation?
It sounds like a big number, yeah. And as you know, we try at the Fed to weigh costs and benefits and take that into consideration.
Would you agree that those other four things that I said are underpinning inflation, would you agree that those probably are the four major problems?
Yeah, so overwhelmingly, most economists would not think of it in terms of money supply, but would think of it in terms of supply and demand. And although there may be a role for money supply, they would think in terms of supply and demand being out of balance. And that's how I think about it.
You know, the definition of inflation I've always had was too many dollars chasing too few goods and services. If you throw more money in, you have more money to supply to the consumers.
There's 40 plus years of history and actually Milton Friedman at the end came back and said, you know, that's not really working anymore.
Mr. Chairman, I just
may
got
be
one
working
more,
again though. Is it
one more quick comment for you with regards to this? It looks to me like whenever you're modeling,
time has expired.
When you're trying to model and you use these four different things, I hope that your models are including these things in your modeling. I appreciate just the 13 seconds that I'd be able to finish my question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Absolutely, thank you. Gentleman from California, Mr. Sherman, who is also the chair of the Subcommittee on Investor Protection, Entrepreneurship, and Capital Markets, is now recognized for 5 minutes.
Chairman Powell, I want to thank you for bringing to the attention of this committee over the last several years the systemic risk posed by tough legacy LIBOR, some $16 trillion of instruments where we would not know the interest rate that the debtor is supposed to pay the creditor. And $16 trillion is a big problem. We passed the relevant bill back in March. And for those who think Congress can't possibly deal with a problem until after the last minute, we passed it a year and a half before the LIBOR hit the fan. That bill requires rulemaking by the Fed. And the rulemaking is supposed to be done by mid-September. And that would put us in that's the final step in making sure that these LIBOR instruments are not a subject of uncertainty, because even one basis point, a thousandth of a percentage point of risk or uncertainty, turns out to be significant when you're dealing with $16 trillion. So Chairman Powell, can we count on the Fed in getting these regulations out by mid-September?
Yeah, so by the way, thank you for all of your efforts on this technical problem, which have really, really helped move it along. And in terms of the rule, yes, we know the deadline. We know it's a tight deadline, and I'm assured that people are working very hard to meet that deadline.
Thank you. You're shrinking your balance sheet.
And welcome to the Halftime Report. I am Frank Holland in for Scott Wapner. We're keeping a very close eye on Fed Chair Jay Powell's testimony before the House Financial Services Committee. We're going to bring you any major headlines that come out of his testimony. Obviously, we've been keeping a close eye on it so far. But right now, we want to turn your attention to the markets and your money. Our investment committee today, Brenda Vingello, Josh Brown, Jim Liebenthal, and Pete Najarian, co-founder of MarketRebellion.com. But first, let's get a check on the markets right now. Looking at the Dow right now, in the red, very slightly down about a third of a percent. The S&P basically flat. The NASDAQ up almost a percent off of its highs just a moment ago, but getting some help from falling bond yields. And now we want to get over to our Alon Moy in D.C. with the top headlines from Fed Chair Powell's Q&A. Alon.
Well, Frank, this hearing is really more of a vent session for lawmakers to air the pain their constituents are feeling from rising prices at the pump, at the grocery store, when they try to buy or perhaps even rent a home. Republicans repeatedly ding Chair Powell over his support for more fiscal stimulus back in late 2020. Powell said that that is over. He is done with trying to comment on fiscal policy. The Fed should stick to its knitting. But of course, that did not stop lawmakers from debating the root causes of inflation, with Democrats warning Powell as well that if the Fed goes too far, too fast, then they could risk high unemployment and sending millions of people out of work. Now, separately, Frank, I also want to mention that we got some breaking news during the hearing of a new warning from Intel saying that its plans to expand in Ohio, which $20 billion expansion, could be delayed or scaled back if Congress does not act to pass the CHIPS bill, which would send about $52 billion of support to the semiconductor industry. In a statement that I received from Intel, the company said that the scope and pace of that expansion in Ohio will depend heavily on funding from the CHIPS Act, and unfortunately, that funding has moved more slowly than we expected, and they still don't know when it will get done. It is time for Congress to act so that Intel can move forward at the speed and scale that they have long envisioned for Ohio. So there, we're hearing some companies warn publicly about the dangers of Congress dragging its feet on this bill. Just yesterday, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer had said that they want to see this legislation and the broader package passed by the end of July. We'll see if that actually happens, Frank. A lot of moving parts here on Capitol Hill.
All right, Alon Moy down in D.C. Chip sector actually under some pressure today. AMD down 2%, NVIDIA down 1.5%. Jim Liebenthal, I'm going to come over to you. I know you have some stake in Intel. What's your take on that news?
Yeah, and just to be clear, I don't have a stake in Intel, but I am overweight semiconductors in general. To answer your question, Frank, I don't like reading this announcement. One wonders, is this just kind of politics at play here, or is this a cover story that Intel is trying to back down on what is the largest investment thus far in the U.S. in the semiconductor space? So it is troubling. However, if there's anything that Congress can do that is worthwhile and good, it would be to pass the CHIPS Act. I can't handicap whether that will happen or not, because there's a lot of other things that Congress wants to pass that would not be as ubiquitously positive. And you can't tell if this is going to get caught up in that maelstrom. But the right thing to do would be for Congress to pass the CHIPS Act, for this plant and others to be built, and to help supremacy return to the U.S. in terms of manufacturing.
All right, maelstrom. Don't hear that very often on CNBC. Thanks for that one, Jim. Josh Brown, I want to toss it over to you. We were all listening to to Fed Chair Powell's testimony there at the House Financial Services Committee. Inflation continued to be the theme. What was your take from what you heard?
I thought the stuff about how this is a global phenomenon was somewhat important. Not that the majority of Americans are watching or paying attention to this stuff, but I think it's there's a little bit of a misunderstanding in terms of disentangling how much of the inflation is coming from Biden's stimulus bill versus how much is just endemic and just going to be part of the world that we live in going forward. So outside of that, I don't think there's much there. I just think when we think about what we're seeing in the market right now, the two most important things that have taken place over the last week or two. Number one, oil prices backing off, gasoline prices backing off. I think we've had 8 straight days of falling gasoline prices nationally. That should help us stabilize a little bit some of those consumer sentiment numbers, which seem to be spiraling out of control at this point. And then number two, take a look at the 10-year yield. So this is the kind of thing that I think maybe most people aren't aware of, because just as quickly as rates ran up, they seem to be backing off. I don't know how much lower they'll fall, but 44 basis points has come off of the 10-year yield since June 13th. So that's almost half a point. We were at 3.5%. Now we're back closer to 3%. A lot of that is related to newfound widespread concerns about recession. But the bottom line is, it doesn't matter why. What does matter is that all of this volatility has come from one source, which is battling inflation. So if you get rates calming down, which we have now, and you get oil backing off of its recent highs, which we have now, that's maybe enough of a foundation to say that we may have temporarily found a bottom. I don't know if it's the bottom, but stocks seem to want to stabilize here, and getting follow through in the form of even flat stock prices is better than one-day wonder rallies with no follow through, where we're making new lows right afterwards. So that's what seems to be taking place this week.
Joe, I just want to be clear. Do you think we're reaching peak inflation, or we're near peak inflation? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think that inflation is monolithic enough to be able to say that all of it will peak out at the same time. I think it's very likely we have seen the peak in employment-related inflation. Now you're starting to see layoffs. There are about 100 companies in tech and media that are downsizing. The Wall Street Journal had a big feature about companies pulling offers and kind of like the shadow employment stats that haven't hit the headline numbers. But that's already starting to turn. I suspect business owners are going to get a little bit of relief if and when they want to keep hiring. We'll see what happens. Oil is really not related to that, though. So you could have a situation where labor costs slow down, but energy prices keep rising through the fall. So it's important that we think about the sources of inflation and understand that they have different drivers. Even though concurrently inflation is up across the board, it's not going to stay that way in all categories.
So, Brenda, over to you. Two other headlines. Fed Chair Jay Powell saying the labor market is unsustainably hot. Also saying it's unsustainable for debt to grow faster than the economy. Any other headlines that caught your ear?
Yeah, you know, I think there were just a lot of comments about what does this mean for the job market? We're likely to see slowing, and that's going to be a positive thing. Certainly not for every individual, though, but for the economy overall, we need to see some slowing. Same thing in the housing market. Lots of questions about housing and what does this mean? And as Chair Powell said, you know, housing represents about a third of CPI. So with prices normalizing and potentially starting to come down, that should ultimately have a positive impact on CPI. But as Josh was mentioning, you know, when you look at something like headline inflation, there are several components of that that the Fed really can't impact. There are other drivers there impacting food and energy costs that the Fed may not really be able to impact by raising interest rates. So I think it's a complicated time. But I think also if you look at some parts of the market, particularly areas like small cap equity, where valuation is as low as it has ever been, there is certainly a lot of draconian assumptions here about how this is all going to play out. And I think we need to be a little more pragmatic in as we go in understanding the overall backdrop, which still seems to be fairly positive, certainly not ruling out the potential for a recession in future periods. But I think if we look at the remainder of this year, there is a possibility that we will have a soft landing where things slow down enough that the Fed can potentially pause. And that would be certainly a positive for the stock market.
So, Pete, over to you. How do you see the outlook for the second half of the year? Are you also seeing the potential for that quote unquote soft landing?
Yeah, the potential for it, Frank. I mean, the reality is when we look at this and we look at all the different categories, whether it be nat gas or crude oil or take your pick, I mean, they have come down. Copper's come down. Copper was just trading at 4.5 and now it's at 380. And then you look over at something like nat gas, it was over 9. And now here it's trading closer to the 6s, 630. So that gives you a little bit of relief. I'm not saying that's giving us everything we need, but you also look at crude at 117. Now it's 104, 105. So we have seen some pullbacks. We've also seen, and Josh was talking about the 10-year. I would both highlight the 10-year and the 2-year. The 10-year was up near 3.5. Now we're just above 3. You take over, look over at the 2-year. That was up very close to 3.5. Now it's under 3. So I think those are some interesting parts of what we are seeing right now in terms of catalysts for the market. But there's a lot of different elements that go into each and every decision that everybody's making right now. Obviously, inflation is something that everybody's completely locked in on. But it's also something where we're seeing volatility kind of moving around, but we're also seeing the velocity of these moves. When you look at what's been going on in some of these commodities, some of this has happened in just 1 week, or in some cases, maybe it's 2 weeks. But this is a very, very rapid move, and I think the markets are just trying to kind of navigate their way through. And I think that's why a lot of folks right now are very, very confused. Are we at that peak inflation, or are we just at a point in time where we're consolidating and there's a next level higher? I tend to be leaning towards that second side of it right now. But we'll see, Frank. It's pretty interesting.
So, Brent, I want to come back over to you. J.P. Morgan out with a note today forecasting that the S&P could end the year at 4,800, about almost 28% higher than it closed yesterday, and basically saying that they see inflation moderating in the second half of the year, leading to that so-called soft landing. What else do you think needs to happen? This is the note right here. We're showing it to you right now. What else do you think it needs to happen to kind of create this so-called soft landing and to avoid a recession and make stocks increasingly attractive in the second half?
Well, I think we need to see that the economy hangs in there and the consumers need to keep spending, right, in order to facilitate ongoing economic growth, because the consumer is such an important piece of that. And I think as long as the job market remains relatively healthy, even if some of the froth comes out of it, and inflation does come down and that alleviates some of the pressure that the consumer is feeling and causing them to have to dig into the savings that they saved up over the last couple of years, in that dynamic, I think that we could have more of that soft landing scenario. But the consumer is such an important piece of our economy. And I think looking at where sentiment is today, it's incredibly low. No one's happy about paying higher prices. No one's happy about seeing the correction we've all experienced in financial markets. So I think, though, that as long as the consumer can remain healthy in spending and that we don't see a real significant fall off in some of these areas like the job market, that would facilitate more of that soft landing that J.P. Morgan is forecasting.
All right. Fed Chair Jay Powell still on Capitol Hill right now. Markets actually falling a bit. The Nasdaq still in the green, but down about 0.5% from where it was the top of the hour. The S&P also moving into the red over the last few minutes. Up next, trades on some of the big analyst stock calls of the day. Halftime. Back in 2 minutes. Stay with us.
Old Dominion Freight Line was built on keeping promises. With an industry-leading on-time delivery record and low claims rate, we keep promises better than any other LTL freight carrier, because we treat every shipment like it's our most important one, which means we do the little things right so that we can keep our promises and you can keep yours too. That's what drives us. To learn how OD can help your business keep its promises, visit odfl.com. Old Dominion, helping the world keep promises.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
And welcome back to the Halftime Report. Tesla's price target cut to $1,200 from $1,300 by Morgan Stanley. The firm is trimming Q2 estimates on lower volume. Elon Musk actually just recently complaining about some supply chain issues. It is one of our calls of the day. Brenda, you recently bought it.
We did recently buy it for the first time, but I would say, you know, Tesla's not immune from some of the supply chain issues that are really impacting companies inside and outside of the auto sector. But we think that this company continues to be really well positioned. We're expecting that they're going to be able to ramp production with our Austin and Berlin facilities ramping up. And this company has pricing power, and that's important in this environment. I think to stick with companies that have a great niche, a great moat, and that have pricing power, and we think Tesla has all of those. In this note, the price of target reduction was simply because of an adjustment to the risk-free rate, and I think we'll be seeing a lot of that as interest rates have risen. So I don't want to read anything into that. Still think the company is really well-positioned here.
Pete, over to you. You have a few Tesla calls, right?
Yeah, I did, and I no longer have those. But yes, we even had some buying just again the other day with the stock trading right around that 680 level, and then it took off to the upside well over 700. But, you know, I think that's what we're seeing in Tesla right now. You see these just surges suddenly and then a pullback, and a lot of it could either be the commentary from Elon Musk himself or some of the news that gets out there. So I think that they will have some issues, obviously, a little bit of a slowdown on some of the volumes of delivery, but they're going to be able to make that up, I think, in the second half of the year. So I think this is definitely a solid. I understand why she's holding on to it. I like this name a lot, but when you get quick moves like we've had recently, I think you got to take those off because these markets right now are definitely trading markets. They make it very, very difficult for long-term holds.
Jim, we're also looking at Disney, reiterated as a buy Bank of America. Target, though, cut to 122 from 140. What do you think?
Well, it's a tough time to be a Disney shareholder, and I am one. The reason it's tough is because with all of this talk about recession, what you think about is their, you know, very important profits at the theme parks dwindling away if people stop going. And inflation certainly has been seen to really be prevalent at the theme parks. But here's the thing. What if we don't have a recession? Or, you know, what if jobs stay plentiful? We did have initial weekly jobless claims tick down slightly this week, and the continuing claims are hovering at 50-year lows. So maybe the worst is in here in Disney in terms of predicting a recession that has yet to arrive. So I'm comfortable holding it, but I understand what the risks are facing me and the other shareholders.
So, Josh, I want to come over to you with Netflix. Two different takes on it today. Bank of America reiterating underperform, Cowen reiterating outperform, given it a 325 price target. Where do you see it at, especially in this inflationary environment?
I think it can outperform. I actually think this is one of the few businesses in the market that the inflation scare might actually be overplayed. I think Netflix, similar, I've said this about Starbucks too, there are things in this world that are just affordable luxuries, and people don't give up on them as quickly as you think they might, even though they might not be necessary. So a cup of coffee is one, and I think a video subscription is two. This is a stock that was $700. It's $176. In January of 21, it was selling at 47 times forward earnings. Today, it's 16. And as a matter of fact, it's actually cheaper than Disney, which sells at a forward earnings multiple of 22. So I think a lot of the risk has come out of this name. I don't think everyone in America or everyone all over the world is about to cancel their Netflix subscription to pay for gas. I think that's very unrealistic. And this is the type of stock where you've already had so much pain. It's hard for me to imagine another year worth of news that people weren't expecting. Nobody is expecting much from Netflix over the next 6 to 12 months. So I like it here. I think it's gone through enough.
Yeah, Netflix shares down 70% year to date. All right, coming up, FedEx shares pulling back today, but up 10% over the last month. Earnings out after the bell today. Josh owns it. That trade's coming up next on Halftime.
You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
B2B selling is tougher than ever, and we feel your pain. If you're struggling to close deals, consider giving LinkedIn Sales Navigator a shot. This sales intelligence platform helps professionals like you engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator also guides you in targeting the right buyers, highlights key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and uncovers hidden hot prospects so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/halftimereport. That is linkedin.com/halftimereport for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/halftimereport and get started.
All right, welcome back to Half. FedEx trading near session lows right now. It's set to report earnings after the bell. Shares have outperformed its rival UPS since new CEO Raj Subramaniam took his new role on June 1st. And Josh, you recently bought it.
I did. I bought it for a trade. And if it keeps going my way, maybe it turns into an investment. But I think what's going on here is they came out in March. They affirmed full year guidance. Let's hope that doesn't have to change. They raised their dividend by 53%. The stock had its best single day performance since the 1980s on the heels of them having done that. So I'm staying with it since that happened. And now we're going to basically get the first quarter under the new CEO. And for those that are relatively new to the story, Fred Smith was in his late 70s. There was an activist, D.E. Shaw, involved. They kind of nudged him out, and the COO took over. And the reason that's important, this business is so heavily reliant on snags in the supply chain getting cleaned up quickly and the difficulty of hiring people. So having an operating person as the new CEO, I think, is an important signal. The other thing that's going on is compensation at the executive level will be more tied to shareholder performance. So these are all good things. We'll see what they have to say tonight. Hopefully I can hang on to the stock. I do have a stop loss in place, and I may have to reevaluate if for whatever reason they don't stick to their guidance or throw a curveball at us.
So, Brenda, you and their rival UPS, any thoughts about what you're expecting after the bell?
Yeah, I would just say, obviously having a new CEO in place can be pretty transformative. We've seen that at UPS over the last several years, and that's why we prefer UPS. It's just this focus on better, not bigger, and improving efficiency by implementing more automation, being able to eliminate some jobs of the process, and really just becoming more efficient overall, I think is going to help not only UPS, but potentially FedEx as well in this type of environment that we're in.
So, Pete, you own UPS as well. Any thoughts about FedEx bumping up its dividend? Still below UPS's dividend, to be clear. I believe FedEx bumped up to about 1.5%, UPS at about 3%.
Right. Yeah. And it was a great move. I think that was a great move by the CEO to make that decision. Obviously, the board members as well. I think they've done a lot of the right things. But there's a reason why UPS, if you just look at a 1-year chart, why it's consistently been outperforming against FedEx. And I think a lot of that has to do with the ground versus international and a lot of the different, what goes into that whole pricing model. But I tell you what, I love what the company has done. I think it's been a great decision to do that. And by raising the dividend, that makes them that much more attractive. That being said, UPS still nearly doubled the dividend yield. So because of that, I'm going to stick with UPS. But I do think FedEx is going in the right direction right now under the new CEO.
Yeah, I misspoke. FedEx at 2% dividend yield. UPS now almost at 3.5%. Up next, Pete's latest trades and unusual activity and final trades. Halftime. We'll be right back. All right, time now for unusual activity. Pete, what are you seeing in the options market?
All right, I'm going to start off with Snowflake. Now, this is one that's pretty interesting. Yesterday, they were buying, Frank. It was interesting because they were in the money calls, August 120 calls. Stock was trading 125. Those took off to the upside. They came back again today, and now they're going really short term. They're buying 8,300 of tomorrow's expiring 140 calls. So obviously with the stock trading just about 140 right now, pretty interesting to see if this thing's able to continue to move to the upside and break through that 140 again. It was over there earlier. We also have Freeport-McMoRan. They bought twice today in FCX. Now, not looking so great because the stock's actually making a move to the downside. Stock was trading right around 30. They bought the July 33 calls and then 3,500 of the August 30 calls. So aggressively buying and positioning into Freeport-Mac. They're buying a little bit of time, too, so it's not so much about a today move, but actually a little bit further out into time. EWC, this is an ETF for Canada. I don't talk about this one ever. As a matter of fact, I hardly remember ever seeing this, but 56% of this is financial side of things, financial services, along with energy. So you know exactly what you're getting when you're in this ETF. They bought 7,000 of the September 31 puts. That's with this stock or this ETF moving very close to its 52-week lows. So it might be on its heels, but they're actually even pounding it even more, looking for even more downside there. Those were going for about 85 cents.
Yeah, Snowflake with an upgrade from JP Morgan today as well. All right, time now for our final trades. Mm-hmm. Brenda, you're up first.
Zoetis, an animal company, essentially a pharmaceutical company, but without all of the problems that come with traditional pharmaceutical companies, with generic competition, dealing with Medicare or insurance, none of that, just plain old cash buyer. So we like it here.
Josh Brown.
ChargePoint increasingly looks like it bottomed in early May. Stock is very resilient. I like it.
All right, Jim.
Thermo Fisher, great healthcare company. And it's what I'm recommending because I think we're stuck right now while we wait for more information on inflation and earnings. So it feels like a safe place to be.
All right, Pete, you're getting the last word on this one.
All right. Well, I tell you what, you know that I'm a bull in the energy space, but we've obviously had a significant pullback and a little bit of trimming here and there. And I don't have quite as much exposure, but the XLE does make me start to scratch my head a little bit because they're out there buying 68,000 of the October 52 puts. So looking for this to make some sort of a pullback. We'll see what happens, but definitely seeing those huge put buyers right now.
All right. That does it for Halftime, the exchange. It begins right now.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.